Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies. And today I have a really special guest for you. I've been blessed to interact with this gentleman through LinkedIn, follow his posts, and just drink in all of his wisdom about the trades and construction in particular. But he just has so much wisdom to share. He's a native of the Northeast New York, who's transplanted to Florida. But I'm not going to say more about him. I'm going to let him take it from here. So, Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself.
What's going on, guys? How are we doing? And, Kev, thank you so much. My name is Josh Nieves. I'm the Workforce Development Manager for the Tampa Bay area with Miller Electric in affiliation with the IBEW. I'm also the CEO and founder of Sender Consulting and this Hudson Farm.
So, Josh, we talked a little bit offline, and since we know that a good portion of our viewers and or listeners of the Just Thinking podcast are educators, that's my background, as you know. And so I want you to talk a little bit first about what we can do as educators to help support attracting more individuals into the trades.
That's an excellent question, Kev. So really, what I do, a lot of what I do, is go to high schools and make an introduction to these students about the trade craft. Specifically for me, it's electrical, right? So that's what I do with Miller Electric. That's one part of what I do. But the way I get in there is by having relationships with teachers, with nonprofits, and with the leaders in the school. Part of that is them understanding and seeing the need for this type of career pathway. And one of the things is I can't force that, right? So what I need to do in building that relationship is I need to make that type of presentation to the leaders in the school, right? Who's Josh? Who's Miller Electric? Who's the IBEW? Is this really something I want my kids to get involved with, right? If I'm going to sell this thing and I'm going to bring him to the school and the kids are going to go home with a packet of good information to show their parents, I got to make sure this kid is for real, right? And he's offering something that that really carries value, right? So really just giving the trades a voice. This is really what it comes down to, right? Allowing trade professionals, owners, founders of even small businesses, it doesn't have to be a large entity like the IBEW, a union organization, but just give them an opportunity to come to the schools and speak to your students. They don't know what they don't know, right? One thing I had shared with you, Kev, I did not know trade school was an option for me when I was in high school until I was told that I wasn't university ready, right, in 11th grade. Otherwise, I would need to continue to get my grades up. Now, I wasn't failing, but I wasn't doing too good either way. So I was that 70, 75 kid, you know? But the idea was I got pulled into my guidance counselor's office and they said, hey, Josh, you seem like, we know you're a very physically active kid. You're involved with sports. Have you thought about taking up a trade? Now, I didn't think of it back then because I was just very young, right? Very impressionable. But as I got older, I said, well, why did it take me kind of, I don't want to say flunking, but me not really getting that the best out of high school, for lack of a better term, for this pathway to be introduced to me, right? And I never thought about it then. I've only thought about it recently, but I think we need to get the trades more front-facing, right? And a responsibility, and now I'm actually an educator. I train some of our workforce. So the idea is that if they don't know about, perfect example on my end, communication, work delegation, organization, and team building, right? How are they successful? The same applies. If they don't know about the trade and they don't know about carpentry, plumbing, steam fitting, electrical, and they're not shown that path, how could they do it? So that's where the responsibility lies within the high schools, middle schools, all the way down to elementary school.
I love it. You know, as a former principal myself, one of the things that I always believed in was making sure that the students that we served had as many options as possible.
Yes.
Right. So you know, as you were talking about in your own instance, it was like, all right, so your grades weren't so hot, so we're going to put them on this path. Kind of like it's the backup because you didn't make the grade, if you will, for the university pathway. But my take is, why not give students the opportunity to consider all of it? So if they want to go in this direction, great. But then they may still want to pursue the trades following college or community college or whatever it is. So I just love the idea of options and choices so that, you know, it just feels better when you're in a career where you feel like, you know what, I chose this. I could have done this. I could have done this. I could have done this. But I chose this particular thing. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I couldn't agree more. To your point, when I make these presentations to students, it has not only opened up career pathways for students, it's also done it for some of the educators. And what I mean by that is they have no clue, some, not all, of what it is that even like the IBEW offers, the pension, retirement, the medical benefits, all these different things. I've even had teachers, I had one teacher recently of a construction program say, hey, Josh, can you tell me more about this apprenticeship? This is a guy who's established already, has a family. And in my mind, I'm thinking about, hey, would you like me to facilitate this in your class? Said, no, I'm thinking about taking a leap and going through the apprenticeship program, starting off. And I'm like, really, right? So I think just truly getting it front-facing and like you said, just not allowing it to be a last resort, but a first option, right? One of the things I did find with a lot of my friends that did go to college, right, which was something that they were encouraged to do. They got degrees, I'll give like, you know, whatever, a liberal arts degree, right? And now they're firefighters, cops, right? So, and not saying any of those things are bad. The idea is like, well, maybe if those career pathways were introduced to them early on, they would have jumped on them, right? We never really had the career fairs in my high school. We never really had any trade professionals come in. The only reason I knew about it was because my father was a very successful contractor in New York City with Local 3. Trade school thing I didn't know about until that conversation I had mentioned. So just putting it all out on the table for these kids, right? The fact that you can come into the trades just 18 years old, no experience whatsoever, and you can earn as you learn, get paid full time, go to school part time, and you know, start earning medical benefits and start building into a pension when you're 18 years old. Why are we not sharing this? This is a big deal, right? And in some states, depending on where you live, you know, within 3 to 4 years, you're earning well over a 6-figure salary, and you could, let's say you get in at 18, right? You're talking 23 years old, you got your whole life ahead of you, and you could figure out, no, different paths and different avenues. So we got to have the conversations for sure.
So let's take it to the next step in terms of development. So so we talked first about attraction and some of the things we can do to attract folks to the trades. But what about the development once they make that choice or decision?
So the next piece of that is training, right? Training, constant investment into your workforce. You know, this now, you know, now we're getting into the responsibilities of the employer, right? On the construction end, worked. I want to just say this out loud. I don't believe I'm an anomaly. I found what most would call success early on in my career. And part of that is due to the employer that I work with from 17 years old up until I was 30. Right. And I'll give them a shout out, EJ Electric. I'm so grateful for how they poured and invested in me. There are so many signatory companies, signatory contractors in Local 3 in New York City and throughout the country that work under the IBEW. EJ is one of the top 10 in the nation in gross revenue. But early on, when I got into the business, from day one, they poured into me. They invested in me. Right. So naturally, I was attracted to it. It was a place that I want to be. People weren't shut off to me. It wasn't like, you know, you figure it out on your own, Josh. From every step, from learning how to get coffee for 50 to 100 guys to learning how to run a crew of 50 to 150 guys, right? Age of 24 years old. Like, what am I doing? How did this happen, right? that only happened because they gave me the training and they invested in me and they mentored me, because that's very important as well. And that allowed me to become successful. It wasn't just like I did it all on my own. No, that would be the big, I don't think any of us do it on our own, right? So what? How did they retain me? How did they hold on to me, right? Well, I wanted to be there because I saw from day one, right? We're attracted to those type of things. When we're around good company, we see people take a liking to us. They're teaching the things that an 18-year-old kid didn't. I didn't even know, Kev, I didn't even know how to get on a subway when I was 18 years old. I didn't know they went two different directions. I thought the E-train was the E-train and it only took you to one place.
Right.
And that was my introduction to New York City. And my father, really old school dude, said, you'll figure it out, Josh.
Right.
I needed to be in Brooklyn and I ended up in Harlem. Right. But I had guys hold my hand and walk me to the train. This is the type of guidance that I had when I was stepping into the business as a kid. So naturally I said, hey, you know, these people are invested in me. They're pouring into me, and this is my place, right? Why would I ever leave? I was there for 17 years. And the only reason I left was because I decided I wanted to become a general superintendent, and I needed to, because I kind of hit a ceiling where I was. Not the fault, but the idea was they continued to invest in me and pour into me. They continued to train me. They treated me with respect, and they gave me all the resources, right? We called it the time and the material when I stepped into leadership to be successful.
Wow. You hit on a lot of points there, Josh. And I'm thinking about this through the lens of an educator and some of the ways in which, you know, we can help not only the students that we serve, but educators. Like, that's one thing that's talked about a lot is this idea of having mentors, people there that can help guide you. Imagine being thrust into a classroom setting and you didn't have that mentor. You didn't have that person holding your hand to the subway. You're just thrown into the deep end, you know, figure it out, sink or swim kind of thing. So I love that. I am curious, though, when you talk about the training side of things, in your opinion, what is it that made effective training? What were some of the aspects or attributes of your training experiences that made them impactful and effective for you as a worker?
So one thing was, it wasn't like, here you go, Josh, you're just going to go run up $50 million job, right? There was this slow grooming process, which I think was really special and unique to how they work with me, right? So as an electrician, rather than stick it, I just become a foreman, right? Rather than stick you on a job, you're all alone. What they would do, they make you a sub foreman, right? So this is how it looked for me. So you're not on your own. You have people all around you. You have your GF and you have your superintendent that you can call, you can reach out to, you can get face to face with when you start having those times of uncertainty, right? So when we talk about training, essentially on paper, that really isn't training, but it is at the same time. They're grooming you. They're grooming you. They're teaching you how to communicate, right? Those times where you don't know, like, how to react because someone, maybe the construction industry is not a soft industry by any means. A lot of hard things happen on the job. How to respond to this? I would go right to my GF and say, what do I do? I don't know what to do here. I'm a 23-year-old kid and I have to reprimand a 50-year-old guy because he's showing up late every day. How do I handle this? Right. So essentially in that mentorship, in that guidance, they trained me. They taught me how to build teams. They taught me how to communicate. Soft skills in construction. Who cares about that? I do. That's everything.
Right. Right.
So those are conversations that I had regularly. How to respond in situations that are less than favorable, right? Not lose your lid, for lack of a better term. I sat down in workshops where I was taught how to respond to these things. Not only that, you know, when it comes to safety is everything. Going home safe, going home to your family is the most important thing, right? So they gave me the tools and the resources I needed to be properly trained on safety. So, and if I wanted something that may be a little taboo, right? Like I wanted to learn about something, no problem, Josh. We'll make sure we get you in that class. We'll get you trained up. Whatever it takes for you to be successful, we're going to make it happen. And that was their approach.
What I heard in you, though, what you just shared was your personal initiative. So, you know, sometimes in leadership in any organization, you just see some potential in your staff, your a specific employee, and then you kind of reach out to them and bring it out in them. But I love the idea of taking the initiative as the employee and seeking out that support, seeking out that learning and so forth. And what you discovered is probably not an anomaly either. And that is when they see that initiative, there's a strong inclination to want to provide that support and training for you. Is that accurate or not?
It's super important, right? So that's the other side of it, that it's not just up to the contractor to support you. It's not. That's just not fair. Like, right. You have a duty and you have a responsibility to the people that are giving you that, those great benefits, the great health coverage and that paycheck every week. Like, you have to show you want to be there, right? It's a relationship that takes building upon. Okay, we know Josh. He's a great worker in the field. We also know that he's ambitious to step into leadership, right? So, showing that, why wouldn't they make that investment? They knew I was there to stay, right? And even now, working with an amazing company like Miller Electric, it's not much different. But I do want to say that I never, when I sold my business, I had a contracting business. When I sold it, I decided that I wasn't going to work for anyone again, because I was a little, and this is just something I was dealing with, I didn't like the way the industry was going. Culture, all these different things that I talk about quite often on social media. But I said, I'm running away from the problem, and who's going to serve it? Who better than me, right? So finally just tapping into Miller Electric and learning about their business model, I went, okay, this is the equivalent to what I grew up on for 17 years. I really think this is the place for me, right? So I think that's important, right? Miller Electric didn't have to do anything, but they were able to attract me by their structure, business model, and their culture. So naturally, I got pulled right in.
I love that. You know, you also triggered a couple other thoughts or questions that I have for you about all of that. And one of them is critical thinking. So, you know, having been an educator or serving educators for 41 years, I was really fortunate in my early years of teaching in Massachusetts to be introduced to this whole concept of critical thinking and very specific strategies and approaches to bring out the critical thinking and problem solving skills in the students that I would later teach and then serve as a principal. So talk to me a little bit about critical thinking and how important that is. You mentioned the soft skills, but that ability to think critically and to problem solve, how important is that?
Yeah, it's super important. You know, one wrong move on the job can lose your life, or someone else can lose their life as well, right? Construction industry is not a joke, and it's not for the faint of heart. One of my last projects as a foreman while I was in the field was the Brooklyn Bridge. Right? There was a lot that can go wrong very fast working on a project like that. It is my responsibility to think critically in how I'm going to handle a specific situation, right? What are we going to do here, especially when it's involving someone's life? So in that, the reason why I was able to be so successful in my mindset and my approach to that was this is going to go back to mentorship. Anytime I had a question, or maybe I was second guessing myself, or I truthfully didn't have the experience, there were people that were readily available to me that I could reach out to that they've smelt it, tasted it, and touched it 1,000 times, right? So having those resources is absolutely incredible. And many of these individuals are retired. Truthfully, they're retired. I just, because of my father, my father's 84 years old now.
And God bless
you. Yeah, thank you. And one of the things was he was always available as well, right? He did all the things that I was doing and some. So he saw it all. So if I had a question or if there was something I was dealing with on the job, I would go to him, or I'd reach out to the guys who brought me up and say, hey, like, how would I handle this? And I have one thing that's really important. Critically thinking for me, I had to put my ego aside, right? 25 years old, I don't have all the answers. I truly don't, right? I need to go to people who do, right? I need to go to the source. Who am I going to surround myself with that can kind of get me out of this situation or help me through it, right? That's exactly what I did. No pride, no ego. That's what I did. And it worked. It did, you know?
Josh, I'm wondering, as a 25-year-old young person who thinks a lot of times they've got the world all figured out, maybe know a little bit more than some others.
Yeah.
When you said put your ego aside, I got to believe that's a little bit easier said than done.
Yeah.
So what was the motivating factor for you to do that? Because you're young and you're strong and you're capable and you think you got it. You know, you can do anything, right? You're invincible.
Yeah.
What is it that caused you to know to put that aside? And anyway, I'm just curious what that process is.
That's actually a really cool question because it has nothing to do with construction. So when I was in my, I'm 10 years old, early teens, I competed in amateur boxing. So yeah, so you may know where I'm going with this. So long story short, I competed in the amateurs throughout my teens, is very competitive athlete in that regard in combat sports. Early on, I figured out what it feels like to get punched in the nose, right? And it does not feel good at all. So if that happens to you enough, you quickly realize that you're not the smartest or the toughest guy in the room, right? So to answer your question, I knew what humility was for two reasons. Most importantly, it was because of my faith, right? And I think that's something that, you know, I talk about it quite often. My faith was one of those things that played the biggest factor. But truthfully, early on, you know, being someone who was an athlete, I knew what it was to take a loss. And I knew what it was to have to go to your coach and say, hey, what am I doing wrong here, right? Or to even get grabbed by the collar and say, hey, you're dropping the ball. You're dropping the ball, kid. You're going to step out for a second, right? So I knew what that was like early on. So when I got into my 20s, I wasn't going to get punched in the face. I wasn't going to drop the ball. I was going to beat the guy to the punch, and I was going to make sure I knew how to handle the situation before I decided to move forward.
That's powerful. Well, that kind of takes us to the next piece. So we talked about three things before we jumped on this call. So one was attracting the next generation of individuals to the trades, developing them once you have them there, and then retaining them. And you've already touched on a lot of the whys behind an employee would stay with an organization, culture, support, training, all that. But can we take a little deeper dive into this last piece here of retention?
You know, it's an interesting thing, and it's something that I don't know if anyone has the actual answer for it, right? Because, you know, we all have to do what's best for ourselves when it comes to working or staying with the company. What I've seen, what's allowed people to stay and thrive within a company is growth opportunities. This is just from what I've seen. The two companies that I've committed to, working with EJ early in my career, right? Top 10 in the nation. And now working with Miller, who was just acquired by EMCOR, who is a $14, $13 billion company. How do they do it? They must have the secret sauce, right? If you look at their people who are in leadership, they've been with them just the same way I was for 15, 20, 30 years. Why? They constantly had opportunities to grow. Why do people leave companies, right? They either hit a ceiling, or B, the culture's not good, or the money's not good. A lot of times it's financial, right? So when you work with companies who are literally checking off all those boxes for you, they're saying, hey, listen, you want more money? We'll give you the opportunity to step into a bigger role. We have great culture here, right? Why would you leave? Why would you leave? I know I wouldn't. I can't see why, but typically it's money. I mean, that's typically the number one thing. Culture is right there with it, and not having any opportunities for career advancement. If you have those three things, which those two companies still do to this day, you should have no problem retaining people. No problem whatsoever.
Well, you and I talked at the beginning of this that we like to keep the podcast episodes to about 30 minutes, Josh. We've covered some great ground here over the course of this conversation. I know you and I are going to continue to have conversations, and we may need to revisit this at some point. But for today's purposes, is there anything else about which you're just thinking that I did not give you a chance to speak to during the course of this time together? So you get the last word, brother.
Yeah, serve your people. No matter what sector you're in, whether if it's education, whether if it's the construction industry, leadership is just a counterpart of servant leadership. How can you better serve your people? If you can know their pain points and how you can better serve them, you are always going to be successful, whether that's in your business, whether that's in your team, or if that's even at home. Serve your people.
Love it. I'm not going to say anything more because that's a great note on which to end. So I want to thank you for being part of Just Thinking.
Thank
you. I look forward to our next conversation.